Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to our wonderful Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, my dear. How are you?
Good, thank you. Great to see
you. Good.
Now, Dennis, a few weeks ago, you stimulated a lot of listener interest in your discussion on the topic of cabbage leaves.
Yes.
The interest continues, and in a moment, you're going to read an email from a listener about the dependence on cabbage leaves for treating her animals.
And it's fascinating to do that.
Yeah, but also today you want to emphasise the benefits of cabbage and particularly cabbage leaves for helping other conditions topically and also as an oral medicine.
Look, I don't think it's overplaying the topic because the more I read and the more I reflect on my use of cabbage in various forms, and I have used cabbage in various forms for many years, the more I'm convinced that there's a lot more to say about this remarkable plant, vegetable, herb, call it what you want. And I think, therefore, it's useful to look at some of the other areas other than just using it for one topical application. So I'm sure listeners won't be bored by touching more on the topic because it's exciting. And by the end of it, I hope we'll all be making a beeline to the vegetable stall and stocking up cabbage.
They're going to be out of cabbage at all the supermarkets.
Yeah. Oh, that was the deal with two of the big supermarkets. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's right. Local grocery stores.
Yeah.
Go and get your cabbage. But Dennis, before we get started, you had said you had an email about cabbage leaves on animals.
Look, I've received a lot of feedback from our discussions from quite a few listeners, but one in particular arrived as a result of last week's program. A lady wrote and said, very interesting to hear of the loss of traditional medicine in maternity wards. I'm a dog breeder and we still use many of the old methods as we don't usually have a veterinary surgeon present. And many medicines that are available for people aren't really appropriate for dogs. I have just saved my lactating mother dog from mastitis with cabbage leaves.
Wow.
Cheers. So is it, I thought that was appropriate, so there we go.
That's fantastic.
It is something that demonstrates the way in which this remarkable plant, vegetable, healing herb can apply to animals just as much as we humans. Thank you for that dear lady that sent that in, and I'm sure your dog will do very well.
I'll have to let the vets know for Pet Chat.
Yeah, well, look, there may still be some vets, particularly in the countryside, that use older techniques, but I have not met too many of them in urban areas, but that's the way it is.
Well, it's lovely to get some listener feedback as well.
Oh, this is crazy. One of the reasons I'm still dealing with the topic is that the amount of feedback, telephones, to my rooms, emails, etc., has demonstrated that the interest is widespread, and I've only touched the surface. I'll talk in a moment of where it played a very important part in my teaching.
All right. Well, before we do that, we've got Graham from Adamstown Heights on the line. Hi, Graham. How can we help you? Oh, you there? I think we're having a few phone issues. Anyway, hopefully Graham will call back. Now, Dennis, you have always emphasised food is your best medicine.
Correct.
Before you start talking more about the benefits of cabbage, how is it that the topic of food is your best medicine isn't emphasised enough in teaching programs?
Look, that's a question that I've often tossed around. I was so taken up with what I considered to be the lack of this information that when I conducted Southern Cross Herbal School many years ago now, I taught to my undergraduate students a subject called food therapy. Now, food therapy is essentially getting over to health practitioners, potential health practitioners, particularly naturopaths, herbalists, sometimes doctors, but those that were more interested in a practical application of appropriate foods and vegetables to genuine disease conditions and not necessarily being bogged down by a lot of the biochemistry, the scientific justification of this or that, which in my opinion is too dominant in nutritional courses. So I ran the course entitled Food Therapy, and I mentioned that to academics out there, those that are in control of various faculties that deal with health, a topic like this, and you can use Carpenter's book. That was a book that I used in the teaching of the program, and I think it's just called Medicine as Food by Gene Carpenter. I mention this because there surely is interest on the part of academics to look at a more practical, functional way of using the knowledge of food, structured around food, to heal human disease. My opinion is, and it is an opinion, that too much nutrition, and my opinion is too much dietetic information, is so academically based that a lot of the practical information that screams out from years of tradition and modern medical usage is being overlooked. Now, I know that's controversial, but I genuinely believe the interest shown, particularly in our meandering through this wonderful food and vegetable cabbage, indicates the public's interested in it. It's a topic that should be taught, particularly to medical and naturopathic practitioners. Very frequently, a food can be the appropriate therapy rather than a drug.
Mm.
That's pretty potent stuff to say, isn't
it? Well, I
think it's meant to stimulate.
It's interesting, yeah.
And I've mentioned a couple of references years ago. I don't think we've mentioned it on the program this year, but years ago I spoke about on the program the way in which foods can be effectively used in addressing cancer, but particularly by way of lessening one's possibility of getting cancer, or even helping in the management of cancer, not as a single entity, but as a complementary component of any treatment. And I use that book, which I still talk about, entitled Foods That Fight Cancer. Now, I'll say that slowly, Foods That Fight Cancer, written by two French-Canadians, Denis Gingras, PhD, and Richard Bellevue, PhD. Both of them work in Quebec, in a cancer research centre, in a hospitalised environment. That work, in my opinion, is still the greatest defender of seeing the sanity of using various foods, well articulated in that text, in an attempt to resist one of the most troublesome diseases in our society.
Mm.
I mentioned that text. I've had many clients over the years come to my rooms and get hold of a copy, but I these days refer them on to bookshops or the supplier. It must be read. And I said in this program only a couple of weeks ago, the book entitled Healing Yourself with Fruit, Grains and Vegetables by the French doctor, Jean Valnet, MD, is remarkable also in reinforcing my point that we're not just talking about, how can I call it, secondary material. People think that when you're talking about something like cabbage, that you're off your face, to use the colloquial expression. But if we talk about Brassica oleracea, that changes the tune,
yeah,
doesn't it? The Latin name makes all the difference. It gives it respectability. So you get a full audience of nutritionists coming to hear an academic lecture on Brassica oleracea. But if you say Dennis Stewart's going to give a lecture on the possibilities of cabbage, you'd get one or two, but that's about it.
They think you're a farmer.
Well, I am a bit of a farmer, although that's coming to an end. The other day taught me that working out on the farm in temperatures that I shouldn't have been coping with, but never mind. That's my journey, which is coming to farming end.
Oh, dear. Well, we've got Graham back on the line.
Okay.
Hopefully he's there. Hi, Graham.
Hello.
Good to talk to you. How can we help you?
Dennis. I have an extremely scaly scalp, and
yes,
for quite some time I was using a product that you weren't supposed to say on your program called Neutrogena T-Gel.
Yes, I've used it myself.
But they have changed the recipe of the thing, and it's just not working anymore. The original coal tar version kept my head in good shape, but this is just not working. I'm just wondering, do you have anything in your bag of tricks?
Well, as I understand it, there is still the, how can I call it, the one that is primarily pine tar based. The other one has some salicylic acid in it, which is very sensible because salicylic acid is what's called a keratolytic agent. That is, it's renowned for getting rid of scales. But I have tended to use the both. they all share common characteristics, or those two products share common characteristics with coal tar preparations, which is works along similar lines. I would say talk to your pharmacist, because I really am not up to the commercial situation regarding those two preparations. I'd be surprised if the original one, as you call it, was not available. Talk to your pharmacist. But if you are, how can I call it, into more of the tar products, pharmacies also stock very appropriate preparations of coal tar, which, in my opinion, works well for the purpose of getting rid of scales from the scalp. So to answer your question, I can't vouch for what you've said there, that the original, or what you call the tar-based preparation, is no longer available. That could only
Online, it said that they have discontinued it.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, then I'm contradicted. I have one or two containers of it at home. All I can say is, if you're not getting the result with that, you can still get, or you can get a similar result, I would say, and confirm with your pharmacist, preparations that contain coal tar as a shampoo.
All right.
It's not odorous, and it works well. I've used it at times when the other preparations have not been available.
Okay, I'll give that a shot. Now, can I just have one thing? I have terminal cancer at the moment. I have a tumour in my stomach in an inoperable position.
Yes.
And somebody gave me a document on a thing called fenbendazole.
Oh, yes, fenbendazole, yes.
And apparently it's used on animals, but they've done a lot of work overseas to see what it can do on humans. I'm just wondering if you've ever come across it.
Look, it's popularly circulating. It was also used by some who were able to source it during the COVID epidemic.
Oh, right.
And it is still circulating. It's not something I'm familiar with. As I've said, I'm not a bad herbalist, but I'm not much good at anything else. I would be cautious of the substance unless you can discuss it with your doctor, and some of them may know more about it than what I do. I'd be a little bit reserved about placing too much emphasis on it. What stage are you at with your problem?
They reckon about 6 months or so. But yeah, I'm not in any pain at the moment,
but it's
growing all the time.
Are you on chemo or anything like that, radiation therapy?
No, we're about to try some radiation, but they just don't think it'll get, well, it certainly won't get rid of it, but it might sort of shrink it a little bit. But
well, look,
they're not real confident about that one either.
This is something that I've always been interested in. How can I help people who are battling with cancer? Not that I have a cure for it, but I genuinely and sincerely believe that I have the right to say that many people that I have spoken to, consulted with, have benefited as far as the prognosis is concerned, as far as the length of time is concerned, by using what I call complementary supplements or medications. Now, I'm going to surprise you, but you can search this on the net yourself. I'm going to talk about the topic on the program in a week or two, because I've done a lot of research on it. If you study the herb or the vegetable known as Beta vulgaris, B-E-T-A, vulgaris, that is commonly known as beetroot. Now, you might be very surprised, or not surprised, if I were to tell you that that is one of the most popularly used natural medications to support a person's transit through the cancer episode. It is. I have a scientific article that one can locate from the net. If you were to ring me, I could give you the details of that. I haven't got time to go into it. But in Germany, for instance, it is the most popularly and regularly used supplement to manage various aspects of the cancer journey, one of the most important being to help the patient or client deal with the fatigue, the depression, the loss of appetite, particularly when the patient is receiving aspects of cancer therapy. I would suggest that get on the net, punch in, call it up as beetroot, as complementary medicine, and you'll see that what I'm talking about is, again, not anything simple, but well and truly supported by the European and usage of it in other parts of the world. What am I saying? I'm saying that you perhaps have everything to gain, nothing to lose. Beetroot is not a terrible thing to do, to eat. It's quite a pleasant thing. However, it is beetroot juice, or you can, as you will find on the when you search it, you can purchase it in bulk form from numerous suppliers. It's very inexpensive. I'm talking, you know, kilo, $30 or something, and it's taken in a powdered form, I think, in a teaspoonful a couple of times a day. Do your work on it. If you perhaps you should mention it to your oncologist or your medical managers. But beetroot is beetroot. It's a food. It's a food.
Well, the good news is my wife is growing beetroot and cabbage at the moment. So
well, you're on the right track, because what I was going to say, and I haven't got time to go into it today, but I mentioned that book, Healing Yourself with Fruits, Grains and Vegetables. Now, in that book written by the two Canadian PhDs, you're not going to believe it, but cabbage surfaces as the number one remedy recommended by the two Canadians in Quebec for usage preventatively, or even as a complementary medicine to use during the treatment for cancer. And in the little food chart, and I'd be happy to supply this to you free of charge, I get it run off for my patients and clients, in the food chart that is the summation of what the two Canadians wrote in that book, cabbage, or what's called the brassica family, because let me just say, Brassica oleracea is the botanical name, as I've said, and jocularly again this morning, Brassica oleracea, but Brassica is a family, and it also incorporates things like Brussels sprouts. It incorporates kale. And when you look at the food chart, which you can get just popping into the rooms, I'll give it to you free of charge, when you look at it, you will find that the Brassica family is the number one group of foods used to help people who are wanting to help themselves. So I think if your wife's growing beetroot and she's also growing cabbage, mate, I wouldn't write off an improvement in your prognosis. You could be sitting on the significant improvement in it. And look, that's not silly to say. I said to a dear patient of mine that I saw late last year, I think it was, who's struggling with a very, very serious condition. I said, and he'd been taking some of my complementary supplements. When I say complementary, that's not free, but to complement his oncologist treatment. I said, look, we've got to get you through. We've got to get you through another year. I said, well, that'll be the deal. He said, well, that's the deal. And we're nearly at the end of the year. I saw the dear man yesterday. I think we're going to see the end of the year. And as a result, I'm sure, of some of the things that he's doing, taking on board. And when I mentioned yesterday to this dear friend of mine, he's not just a patient, he's a friend, of the potential benefit associated with beetroot, he was excited as you are. I'm not sure whether his wife will take to growing it, but if she's growing it, you can't beat. Well, that was put well, didn't you? You can't beat beetroot, particularly if it's organically grown and used with cabbage. Remember with cabbage, however, if you're going to use it as a food, make sure you don't, so to speak, boil the guts out of it. That gives it a bad name, and a very bad name, as well as some other bad effects. It can only be eaten in a steamed or lightly steamed form, or in a juice form. Beetroot, wonderful, similarly. Get on the net and look at what I've said. I'm not a fool. I believe in what I say, even though people think I'm off the planet. These things are more popularly accepted, and the literature that I've mentioned is credible literature from which I have lectured for the bulk of my life, which I stand by and utilise some of it myself.
Thank you for your call, Graham. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we've got Margaret from Morissette Park on the line. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for holding.
Thank you.
You've got an issue with mucus.
I have. I'd like Dennis's opinion on, I've had it for about 18 months or more. Mm-hmm. I've got a very croaky voice.
Yes.
I've had a variety of tests done, I cough up sticky mucus all day and most of the night.
Yes.
I've had chest x-rays, scans, ultrasounds. I've been to an ENT. I've just come out of the hospital yesterday having had an endoscopy.
Yes.
And all they could come up with to tell me was that I need to go and see a speech pathologist.
Okay.
I've tried nasal sprays, natural potions, acupuncture, who told me that the acid was coming from my stomach.
Okay.
What more can I do? I've got no answers. I'm very frustrated. I used to be a singer, and now I can't. I can hardly pitch the note.
Let me ask you a few questions. Are you able to trace the commencement of this condition to any medical procedure that you've had in recent times?
No. I've had an energy problem for a long time.
Okay.
So then I contacted an a guy in Sydney who put me on a very strict diet, which enabled me to get my energy back. Lost a fair bit of weight, but it was a very clean diet.
Okay. Let me ask you a few questions. Do you think that it is associated with your upper respiratory system? Is it post-nasal drip occurring, do you think? Do you think it's coming from the top?
I thought it was post-nasal. Yeah. The ENT said, no, it's not, but I can feel it dripping down the back of my nose.
I certainly don't want to contradict any medical colleague, but your set of symptoms is so consistent with what I consider to be an upper respiratory tract. We used to call it upper respiratory tract catarrh, which is another way of saying an abundance of mucus congestion, which liberates itself by dripping down the back of our throat and causing all sorts of problems. If I were in your situation, and again, I'm not contradicting, I don't want to be seen to contradict, but if I were in your situation, I think I'd be trying a couple of simple things which I've found useful. I'll go through them with you. The first thing I would suggest is that you try a combination of a bioflavonoid called quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N.
I take that on a regular basis.
Now, is it in combination with bromelain?
There is one that I've got, and it's quercetin zinc, 50 milligram, and with bromelain.
That is the most useful one because bromelain is responsible for lessening the production and viscosity of the mucus and works with quercetin, which has a more anti-allergic and mild anti-inflammatory benefit on the upper respiratory tract mucosa. That is a fairly standard preparation that I recommend to my patients.
And how much would you take a day?
Oh, look, off the top of my head, I can't. I think depending on what preparation is, a couple of capsules a couple of times a day, taken between meals. That's important, taken between meals.
Right.
Now, secondarily, you've probably heard of what's called cell salts or the old biochemic system of medicines. One of them is called Kalimur, K-A-L-I-M-U-R. Now, that's nothing more than a potassium salt, but it's in a microscopic or what we call a homeopathic preparation. In the Schussler's system of biochemistry, which is structured around the 12 so-called remedies, Kalimur is the primary remedy dealing with congestive, mucousy conditions such as what you've got. And interestingly, controversial as they may be, and they are controversial, the good thing on their side is that they're very safe, they're very inexpensive, and there's a whole popular literature supporting the use of Kalimur for mucousy type conditions. I would add that to what you're presently trying. And thirdly, and I'll be quick, the combination of the herb golden seal.
Yes, I've taken that.
In conjunction with echinacea. Now, if you combine those two, they are usually a blend that deal with most upper respiratory tract problems. And in conjunction with the bioflavonoid and the bromelain enzyme, and do them sequentially. Just don't go out and buy the lot of them. Give them each a bit of a go,
Yep.
And see how each of them can help the condition. But
yep.
I would be most surprised if that didn't do something for you. The good point being they're not conventional drugs. They have little possibility of interacting with anything you're taking, and they're reasonably economical.
Thanks, Margaret. Thanks for your call. Next on the line, we have Craig from Blackalls Park. Hi, Craig. Thanks for holding.
No worries. Thank you. How are you?
Hello, Craig. How can we help you?
Yes, Dennis. I'm stringing up regarding severe arthritis in my knee.
Yes.
Now it starts from the hip and goes down to the foot.
Now,
the doctor's just told me I've got arthritis in my knee.
Yeah, okay. It's more than likely to be osteoarthritis. There are two forms of arthritis. There is osteoarthritis, which particularly targets the hip joint and the knee joints. And yeah. I like to refer to that form of arthritis as wear and tear, osteoarthritis,
right.
Wear and tear. On the other hand, there's what's called rheumatoid arthritis, which is an inflammatory disease, an autoimmune disease, very difficult to treat, very, very painful and immobilizing. What I'm going to suggest is that yours sounds very much like an osteoarthritis. Has your doctor prescribed anything for it?
He told me to take fluid tablets and just painkillers.
Oh, okay. What I would look at that is appropriate therapy if your doctor has made that suggestion. There must be a lot of swelling around the joint, is there?
It is swelled, very swollen. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, look, what I'd suggest you do, and you can run this past your good GP. I always support our GPs. They're overworked and underpaid, in my opinion. But what I'd suggest you do is get onto the well-known preparations of glucosamine and chondroitin. Now, glucosamine with chondroitin, and in some preparations you'll also find the New Zealand green lip mussel. New Zealand green lip mussel, in my opinion, is an undiscovered gem when it comes to serious osteoarthritic conditions. Fortunately, you'll be able to pick up those preparations readily. Look for one preparation that has the three constituents in them, but if not, get the two of them. They're reasonably priced. You should be able to get them from your good pharmacy or a health food store. Glucosamine and chondroitin with or in conjunction with the New Zealand green lip mussel. Get on the net and have a look at them. Have a look at particularly the New Zealand green lip mussel and its fascinating history of how it was made popular by a very well-known case that took place in Edinburgh at a particular hospital.
Right, okay.
That's what I'd suggest. But having said that, follow on what your GP has said, because this sort of treatment that I'm recommending is reparative. Right. It'll take a while to kick in. The literature suggests about 3 months before you're able to really make an assessment as to whether or not the glucosamine and chondroitin treatment is doing its job. It doesn't in all cases, but it helps many.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Thank you very much, Craig.
Okay. Good.
No worries.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye. We've got Dennis from Gwendolyn on the line. Hi, Dennis. How can we help you?
Yes. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
You taught my daughter, so I think you know who you're talking to.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether I've got it or not, but I want to talk to you about parasites.
Oh, yes.
And I'm looking at Dr. Google sometimes. I've got a few symptoms, but I'm not quite sure whether I have to go through for a colonoscopy or something like that.
Okay, look.
So have you got anything like in your rooms there that might be able to get rid of parasites?
I think the first thing you'd have to do is to make sure that you really have parasites. And I don't say that in any critical way, but look, the number of clients or patients that I see who present with what they consider to be a parasite infection is over the top, to the point that I think that there must be some literature circulating out there which basically reduces a lot of human disease to parasitic infection. I'm not convinced that that is valid, and what I would do with any symptoms that you suspect may have a parasite origin, get it checked out. See your GP, get a stool test. If there are symptoms of bleeding or other things, he may well indicate a need for a colonoscopy. But before you you've had one, have you?
No, I haven't, but I've got a referral to go and see.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I think regular colonoscopies can be a very sound safety measure. And if you
and the other end as well.
A gastroscopy. Look, I think you're on the right track there. I think I wouldn't waste time with any other things, which I don't think would be appropriate. And I come back to the point, if there are parasites present, they need to be confirmed medically, and certainly don't go on any sort of over-the-counter recommendations, because most of them aren't appropriate. Get yourself scoped and make sure that everything's sound there. And if the symptoms you suspect to be parasitic are still active subsequent, that's the time to talk about perhaps a treatment requiring medication.
Well, it'd come up in an MRI or a CT scan, wouldn't it?
And look, I'm not sure about that. Your GP is better qualified to comment on that. I would think that stool tests are perhaps more appropriate, but also a symptom analysis. Your medico is the best person to follow up that with you. Okay.
Yes. Well, I've got an appointment to go and see the colonologist.
I'm happy about that. Yeah, happy about that. Yeah, nice to talk to you. I hope your daughter's doing well.
She is. Thanks very much, Dennis.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis. Okay. All the best.
Bye.
Bye. Now, Dennis, we had Lorna from Cessnock give us a call. She's asked if you can repeat and spell the names of the herbs for mucus.
Okay. I'll restrict myself, Lorna, to just the herbs, not talk about the other supplements. I mentioned two American herbs. The first one was the well-known herb golden seal, S-E-A-L, two words, golden, G-O-L-D-E-N, seal, S-E-A-L. The second herb was echinacea. I'll spell that for you, E-C-H-I-N-A-C-E-A. Now, they're readily available, easily obtained, and harmless if they're used sensibly. They're the two herbs I'm sure I mentioned.
Thank you very much.
I mentioned that.
They are. Now, just quickly, did you want to talk about some other conditions that are treated topically with cabbage leaves?
I wanted to, but time's not going to give us much, except I would say this, that in the history of the use of cabbage preparations, particularly in France and in European documented medicine, serious, very serious conditions of the extremities, i.e. the legs, particularly in their ulcerated state. And there's also cases where serious threatening infections have also, both conditions, have been seen to be very potentially appropriate to help resolve those two stubborn and very compromising conditions. I could be very ebullient and talk more elaborately about the way in which both herbs have been used to help ulcers that have refused to be helped with all modern topical applications. They are hard to treat. I had a student that studied with me that became very good in treating ulcers, and she made her own ointment, which was called brassica ointment. And I saw some of the results of that when it was used as a topical ointment in addressing ulcers of the extremities. Now, I've always emphasised the virtue of honey as a healing agent, particularly for slow-healing ulcers or stubborn ulcers of the leg. I would like, however, listeners and doctors or therapists, naturopaths also to note that the use of cabbage, particularly in a more refined form perhaps, as an ointment based on the fresh outside leaves of the cabbage, those two agents, in my opinion, are undiscovered gems. Honey at this late stage is still not used medically enough, in my opinion, and cabbage is still readily available and not well known. Now, even with the use of infection, there are instances of where serious infection, gangrenous infections of the extremities, where everything else has failed, a topical application of medical application of cabbage poultices has in fact helped resolve the infection. I have the instance of the case here, which encourages me to say that, not that I'm saying it should be used as a primary therapy, but if it comes to the point where an amputation is being considered, any porters in the storm is worthwhile going to. All right.
Just quickly, apparently there was one more herb that you missed for mucus.
Okay, I mentioned, I think, bromelain, the pineapple enzyme, in conjunction with quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N.
Okay, well, that was it. Thank you very much, Dennis. We'll catch up with you next week on 2NURFM.
Thank you, my dear.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.